cliffcentral.com. Welcome to our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Last week, we had Belinda Wagner from USB Ed in with us in the studio, and we were talking about how to identify and retain high-value customers. A great podcast. Download it from the website. In the first half of our business skills conversation brought to you in association with USB Ed this week, we're going to be talking about how you broaden your product and service offering range and the things that you should be talking and considering. Joining me in studio is Mark Peters. He's a faculty member at USB Ed, and he also runs his own business as an independent strategy facilitator who assists companies develop and meet their strategic objectives. He teaches marketing and strategy at a number of local and international schools. Mark, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you, Vivi.
And if I may say, no stranger to the studio. You've been with us before, so thank you for coming back.
Pleasure.
So, if I was to ask the question, I mean, why would people even want to consider adding new products or line extensions into their company's product mix that they've already got? I mean, things are so complex already. Why do we want to even add any more complexity into our world?
Yeah, you're 100%. And I think one of our messages today, Richard, for your audience is focus is the name of the game at the moment. But let me answer your question directly. Two key issues. I think the first issue is growth. You need to look for ways to grow your business. Mm. And I think secondly is that our customers will often demand that from us. We're often quite reactive to what customers are looking for, and they will look for changes to the product and service that you offer. And that sometimes means that you have to develop a new product line in your business. At a later stage, before we close, Richard, it'd be good to chat about how people might use their brand name in a completely different area. But I think that's not the question that you're asking now.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the things for me is how adding an extra product range actually helps diversify risk to your business and effectively attract people with different preferences, thus spreading your, you know, the proverbial not all the eggs are in one basket. But I mean, I guess at the end of the day, and I mean you said focus is the name of the game. Doesn't this whole concept of broadening, that's in direct contrast to the whole world of focus. So which is it, Mark? Because it sounds like we're hedging our bets here.
We are hedging our bets, Richard. And I think the issue is it depends. And I hate giving an answer like that either in my business or on a radio station like this. But it really does depend on the circumstances you're in. I think a lot of your listeners will realize that you can't have all your eggs in one client basket. Mm. And as a result of that, by diversifying your product range, you may also mitigate your risk by not having 80% of your business with one client.
So that's client base and also potentially market segment as well.
100%. So I have a good friend in Cape Town, Richard, who recently lost a client, Standard Bank, and that was 80% of his business, and it was done at about 32 days notice. And he had assumed incorrectly it was going to just continue. So there's an example of if he had other products and possibly other customers, he wouldn't be in that situation starting out 1st of January. Mm. And it's a challenge a lot of smaller businesses face, especially if you're like me, not like your business, the finance team, but like myself, is how much time do you spend, how much product do you delve into one particular client before you make a decision, hold on a minute, this is quite risky for me if this client changes. We're also seeing a lot in the South African workplace where you do such a good job for one client, they want to pull you in as an exclusive part of their business, which defeats the whole purpose of running your own business, probably. I'm for the diversification within the boundaries of your business. And we just need to be careful not to diversify too far that you've drifted very far away from your core objectives.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, the whole focus and keep it niche all works well until you meet the first person that's lost that 80% client.
Yeah.
I've seen that happen time and time again. I've experienced it myself, and you realize just how vulnerable one becomes as a smaller business if you have that reliance. Mm. So it's important to have that let's call it extension beyond, you know, just beyond that little core with such a high revenue. Let's call it dependency in there. And I guess there's also an element of seasonality as well that also features here. So if you've got a business that's got a product line or a service line that's really focused, you know, first quarter of the year, what are you doing in the other three quarters of the year? And you know, does it sustain you all the way through? And if something happens there, what's the relevance of now I'm having two, three quarters with nothing? That could be quite material in your business.
Absolutely. And I think what you're alluding to, Richard, would be something that I would recommend to all listeners is this is a great time of the year to start to develop the strategic plan for your business, which includes that market assessment. Mm. You should, if you've started a business in any sector, know what those seasonality and life cycle issues are. So in my business, the second half of the year is much busier than the first half. And how do we manage that? What do we do in that time, as you've said? Do we take on another business? Do we take on another product? We've got our business running 12 months of the year, and how do we balance it? I have never, in 26 years working in the small business development arena, seen a business that was completely balanced 12 months of the year. Never. Mm. What we're seeing more and more, if you're not in retail, is businesses like ours and service sectors businesses actually having to manage 9 months of the year, taking out December, January, and probably April for all the Easter holidays, that we're really trying to manage 12 months expense over 9 months of revenue. Mm-hmm. And once you get that sort of plan in your head, how do we populate what we should be doing? Mm. You did ask me a question when you asked me to help you with today, and that was, so I think a lot of smaller businesses tend to confuse motion with progress. So we're running our sweet totties off certain time, and then we realize we've got no bed, and then we look again. Hmm. And the businesses that I've found that are more successful are really thinking about these questions that you're raising today. We will never, ever get all the answers right in the first few years of your business, but you will start to see trends and patterns, and that will help you make those decisions. Hmm.
Well, one of the interesting things being in a service business, something that I've recently experienced, and it's actually just played through in the last month, is the interesting dynamic between working in Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere around the seasons.
Yeah,
because we were getting ready for a, you know, normal December, let's call it, shutdown.
Yeah, complete shutdown.
Complete shutdown where the whole world stops, you know.
No one wants to do anything.
Well, I thought for a moment, I might have been mistaken, but I kind of thought that somebody had published the thing that the world was going to end on the 15th of December because, everybody wanted everything by 4 p.m. on the 15th of December in South Africa. And then I have an interaction with we have a client that is Northern Hemisphere based, and global in its nature, and for them, the period of December, I mean, they were ready, and we did have board meetings on the 22nd of December, and for them there was absolutely nothing wrong with that, and they were up and running again on the 3rd of January. They didn't seem too much to Monday, Tuesday, you know, we were still trying to figure out what the day of the week was. Mm. They were running the business.
Yeah.
And it just, for me, made me very aware of the fact that we've broadened our service offering into that environment. We've changed it, let's call it hemispheres, so to speak. Same service. Same type of client.
But different countries.
Different, but interestingly, north-south scenario. Yeah, yeah. And immediately, I mean, this entity still has operations in Africa, but they're north of the equator. Mm. And they live in a world of European calendars and culture and all the rest, as opposed to a Southern Hemisphere African thinking.
Yeah.
And I found that absolutely amazing. And for me, it kind of talked to that extension of the product range. I mean, you know, if I was wanting to say, where's my time going, and I wanted to fill up the whole year, you know, 9 months, 12-month problem, the reality is clients like that, that are operating in the Northern Hemisphere, are great to have for the downtime from December, middle of December to the middle of January that you have in South Africa. Although I must say, you then definitely want to have South African clients for when they're having their summer holidays in July.
Sure.
Because nothing happens in that month.
You're dead right.
So, yeah, it's that element.
And you're alluding to the balancing act, Richard, spot on. Having come from the Northern Hemisphere, Ireland, the wettest country in the world, it's good to be living in South Africa, but let me just say, we do tend to do our businesses a disservice when we're shutting them down for so long and we become inaccessible. I think it's a mistake that small businesses make, that especially starting out, maybe you need to give up some of those holidays and go away at a time that's much quieter. If you've got kids, that's a challenge. But the reality is, I was working with quite a large cleaning company. They had 3,000 employees, so it wasn't a small business. And they shut down for Christmas. And I said to the lady, what's your busiest time of the year? She said, oh, we could double to 6,000 if we could work over Christmas because people want their offices cleaned. I said, why don't you do that? She said, we need to take a holiday. And I felt that was just the wrong, the wrong mentality. Here's a big opportunity for you to have a differentiator against your competition.
Well, my wife and I always have this very interesting debate about, do you ever want to work in an industry that's working when other people are having holidays? So, you know, the entertainment industry, the hotel industry, the catering industry, food, beverage, that sort of space. I always, you know, think to myself, you know, you're out at a hotel and you watch these people walking around you serving and doing what they're doing, and you're having a relaxing time and they're working.
Yeah.
But that's the way the world works.
Yeah. And it's the industry that they've chosen.
It's a service industry.
Absolutely.
So just a question in terms of, you know, if you're going to broaden your activities in terms of some sort of, let's call it new product development or new service development, we're thinking, I mean, ultimately customer need should drive everything. And I guess to do the customer need element, you need to understand your customer and understand what they're looking for and what they want, and then connect it with your business in terms of what you're currently doing. My question, how far can you push from the envelope before you start running into challenges in your experience?
Yeah, a difficult one, Richard. But let me take a stab at it by saying to you that I don't think if you're in a small business, you can push too far the edge of the envelope before you're moving away from your core competence and limited resources. I know that sounds a very conservative response because you'll get a Google, a Yahoo, which started with next to nothing and they had an idea. But I think for businesses in South Africa, the majority of them, you don't want to drift too far away from what your core competence, what you're really good at doing. So I get very nervous when I hear people. I had a friend recently from one of the banks said he was taking the package at 58. He was getting out and he was going to start a restaurant. And my question was, what do you know about running a restaurant? Nothing, but I eat a lot. and I had visions of him. It'd be like somebody said, I drink a lot of beer and they're drinking the profits. It was really the wrong approach to take. But the other part of your question says, and I don't think we're particularly good at this in South Africa, Richard, but my view would be to talk a lot to your customers and your potential customers. What do they want? Often we think it's an opportunity and we haven't really got the view from our potential customers. So one of the questions would be, you in your business, Richard, or Cliff Central, could talk a lot to potential customers, but ultimately you have to get that customer to shift from their current supplier of this product or service. And that's a different question. So would you move to Richard's team, for example, in the business? Would you do that? So that would be something I would look at. And final comment on your question would be, focus groups are great. Get a few of your friends in, sit around a table, have a cup of coffee, have a drink, and ask them, do they like this product? What do they think about it? How do they sell it? I was very recently at a demo for Herbalife, and I've always had fairly negative views of the pyramid type marketing, and I'm using it broadly. But they had 117 people in a presentation. No forced sale, and there were people lined up after the presentation. And I take that, for instance, different to some of the other pyramid type, is very forced. And I thought, ask your customers what they're looking for.
Ask what they're looking for. Now, if I consider the product life cycle, I think, you know, if I go through the different stages, the way you broaden your product will change depending on the stage you're in. So let's just talk briefly about, let's call it the four stages that I can think of at this point. So at the introductory stage, I'm not so sure you want to be broadening your product at that point, because you're still trying to figure out your own name in the game and effectively have a product base that you're working from. Once you're into the growth stage, I think there's maybe an opportunity to look at, let's call them the associated markets that we talked about earlier.
And linked segments,
And linked segments. And also the listening to the customer. So if the customer, you know, I'm always quite interested in what Uber's done now with Uber Eats.
Yeah.
The reality is everybody loves Uber. Now, why can't I just get them to bring me my food instead of me having to get in the car, go there, come back? Mr. Delivery's there. But it creates a very effective competitive space. For Uber, it was a natural extension.
Yeah.
And it makes a lot of sense for them. So, you know, in that growth stage, just be careful, I guess, not to overreach. Then you get into that, let's call it the mature part of your environment or of your life cycle. And I guess at that point, it's all about defending the market share that you've got.
Yeah.
Because there you want to extend product and service to lock out the competition that perhaps is nipping at your heels and saying, hey, why don't I try to do this?
Yeah, and to keep doing stuff differently. Mm. Otherwise you get overtaken.
You're not attractive. And then I guess at the end of the day, if you are into a decline space, you have to really think quite quickly as to how you can use the positive things that you have got going for you to revitalize, and you know, the traditional S-curve where how do I get my decline to actually become my next growth stage? And I think for me, if you're not at the point in your maturity cycle, in the maturity stage where you know that you're, before you get into that decline, you actually have to be looking at your product extensions. Absolutely. Otherwise, you're going to kill your business.
Almost, Richard, using your analogy, almost before you get to the top of the curve, you're saying, let me look. I have to say entrepreneurs are very good at that. I think that's one thing that we are good at, because we're realizing, heck, there's a lot of people getting into my market. I'm losing sales, or I'm not as busy as I was. My revenue's not great, or I'm not growing. So we do tend to do that. And a great starting point for an entrepreneur, Richard, is to decide what it is that I'm looking for. How much do I want in 2017, 2018, as an example? See if my business is going to give me that, and look elsewhere. I've just, in my own business, started a new product this year, but probably the first time in 4 or 5 years I've genuinely looked at it, but it was by necessity.
Okay. Now, I mean, earlier on you raised the question and you said you'd like to talk about it, and it was on my list to ask, is, so what's the difference between a product line extension and a brand extension? This whole concept of brand extension, I think, is a high risk space as I see it. What's your views on brand extensions and how we undertake that?
So a starting point would be to say to you, for smaller businesses, that's very difficult unless you've really got a. So let me give you an example. As a relatively new startup, the Cliff Central Station would probably struggle to do a brand extension.
So we now have Cliff Central delivering pizza.
Probably not
appealing to the staff.
Although we could dial in for some music, you know.
I'm getting shaky talking heads in the studio. No, definitely not what we want to do brand extension wise.
So, Richard, smaller businesses tend to do that. Some companies have done, and I think just for your listeners, a brand extension is where a company uses its brand to extend into a completely different market. And there are two really good examples that we'll all be aware, most of your listeners would be aware of. Harley-Davidson motorcycles becoming a big seller. In fact, their revenue last year in their clothing business was greater than in their motorcycle business. But Harley-Davidson has been a brand around for maybe 100 years or so, successful and unsuccessful at times. Jeep is another good example. Jeep motor vehicles, for example, and then extending into Jeep clothing and Caterpillar. And they, interestingly enough, they were all in vehicles and all got into clothing as an extension. But we most of your listeners would not have a brand like that. So brand extensions generally can be quite unfocused, can be where you give maybe your employees a chance to go away and use your brand and you have a share of that business. You need to watch it carefully. I've seen some great brand extensions and some very, very poor offering. So for your female listeners, don't buy your men Harley-Davidson aftershave. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, I know.
That as a Christmas present, Richard.
Yeah, there's certain things that you just
it just doesn't work.
Don't do. Okay, so Mark, just in closing, and I want to take us back to the product extension and just quickly just define, and I've kind of got about a four-step process here that I looked at when I said, so what does it take to do a product extension? And I'd like you to just comment on these thoughts. So the first thing, and going back again to the concept of understand your specific needs of your customer in a high-priority market segment. My view would be you don't want to do a brand extension, a product extension into a market segment that isn't ready for it. So you don't want to be building market.
You want to be educating a market.
You want to be product extending into a market that's actually going to fly so that you know it's going to work.
Yeah. And your customers should have been asking you, can you do this? Can you do that? Did you ever think of this? So you're listening to what your customers are saying in that area.
Yeah. And then the next thing about that customer group is making sure that you identify the product or service bundles, i.e. you're bundling stuff together now, that is most attractive to them. Because customers are going to give you a list of stuff that they would love to see you extend your business into. But you want to hit those top one or two things that people are actually prepared to pay for. Old adage, I love it, but am I prepared to pay for it?
And am I prepared to move my existing supplier as a result?
And I think that's key. The next thing for me is this whole principle of making sure that as you do a product extension, that you still have a unique value proposition for the product extension, and you can position that in your market segment. So it doesn't help to do product extension that becomes a me too scenario, because then you're actually not adding value.
No. And we do a lot of that, Richard, unfortunately. People say, oh, I could do that as well, have no differentiator, and suddenly they've lost a lot of money because why would customers go to you rather than their existing suppliers? Absolutely.
Okay. And then finally, I think the thing for me around, that product extension is making sure that you know how you're actually going to sell and distribute that new product extension or line to make sure that your target market actually has uptake. So, I have seen this where it's like, oh, yeah, we got to get into this. And everybody's like, that's a great idea. And customers are loving it and love the idea and the concept. Except we don't have the way to, although we have the customer base, you need a slightly different sales capability or a different distribution capability. You've been providing non-perishable products, and suddenly now you're in a perishable product line. Suddenly your world has changed. The customer base wants this and says, hey, this is great. And I think back to what Woolworths did, Woolworths in South Africa was traditionally a clothing environment. They moved into perishable goods. Now they're almost exclusively perishable.
Predominantly
perishables. But that was a great brand, a great product shift for them. But it must have taken a little bit of mind shift, kind of going, I have a store with racks for clothing, and now I need to have fridges for food.
Yeah.
So you got to get that right. Otherwise, your product extension is going to fall flat on its
and
face.
You lose a lot of money. I think, Richard, the example you've given, and I think they have done a great job with the move into food over the last few years. But just to say, you know, they built a competence there. They pulled in a lot of people, and a lot of your listeners and entrepreneurs wouldn't have those resources.
Yeah,
and you need deep pockets for an investment like that.
Yeah.
And if I was advising a smaller business, I would say in that particular radical move, probably not to do it. I know that sounds very conservative, but unless you can justify why you would have a competitive advantage, have you got a competence? Do you know about the perishable foods using your example? And have you got the resources?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Mark, thank you very much. I really do appreciate your inputs and insights.
Pleasure, Richard.
That's
thank
been
you.
A conversation about ensuring that we're able to move forward in terms of broadening your product and service offerings and the issues that you should be considering. And that was Mark Peters from USB Ed. Next up, we're going to get a little bit more practical with our SME development conversation. Our guest is going to be Evashni Naidu of Enabled, a managed enterprise and supplier development solution provider.
CliffCentral.com.